y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of child disappearance and or death. Listener discretion is advised.
On December 17th, 2011, the father of a 20-month-old Ayla Reynolds called the police to report his daughter missing. Ayla was in the custody of her father, and the night she disappeared, there were three adults in the house, but not one of them will say what happened to her. They say that she was kidnapped and they didn't know who took her, but the evidence suggests otherwise. As of this recording, it has been almost 12 years to the day Ayla went missing, and her mother still has no answers as to what happened to her one-year-old daughter that night.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
Okay, guys. So that tells you it's going to be a tough one. Child cases always are. So we do want to just, you know, make you aware of that before we get started. We do also want to thank Amanda C., Lindsay, Renee, Banda, Amy Hart, and Nicole Cummings for requesting this case. That's a lot of requests.
Yes.
Yeah.
And thank you to Beth and Mark for writing this up. Beth did the majority. Mark added to it. So thank you guys for that.
Thank y'all. All right, so let's talk about Ayla Reynolds. Ayla was born on April 4th, 2010 to Justin DiPietro. Do you say DiPietro or DiPietro?
DiPietro.
Okay, that's kind of what I heard the majority to. So to Justin DiPietro and Trista Reynolds in Waterville, Maine, Ayla lived with and was taken care of by her mom, Trista, from birth up until just a few months prior to her disappearance. So basically what had happened was Trista was having issues, I read, with alcoholism, and she wanted to go to rehab, and she wanted to make that decision to have a better life for her and her daughter. So she left Ayla in the care of her family, her mom, her sister, while she was going into rehab. Okay, that's all fine and good. That's the agreement that was in place. Because during this time, Justin, the father, had jack shit to do with Ayla. Not one thing did he have to do with Ayla, hardly ever. He never had her. He never, like, they didn't have a custody agreement in place. He wasn't coming to spend a lot of time with her. He didn't really know much about her. If you watch interviews with him and they're like, what was your favorite thing about your daughter? He's like, I mean, she was my daughter. She was like everything to me. That's like all he'll say.
Right.
He doesn't appear to know much about her. He decides at this point, even though he's never fought for custody before, that he now wants full custody. Like now, like today. Like not in the last 20 months, but like now. So he contacts the Department of Health and Human Services, and police officers show up to Trista's family's home. And they say, we're here to take Ayla. Her family is freaking out because this is very unexpected. Again, it's not like they're in this heated custody battle.
Well, yeah. And it's incredibly opportunistic of Justin, in my opinion, because what better time to call the State Department of Health and Human Services than when Trista is in a facility and the family members who are taking care of her really don't have the, like, it would be really easy for him to have gotten custody right then, right?
Yeah, the law would not be on their side. Like,
right.
Yeah, there's not. And because they didn't have this formal legal custody agreement in place, Justin is the father. And so he has a right.
Right.
Even though he's never really acted on that right before, he does have it. So he decides, I want custody right now. They remove Ayla from Trista's family's home. And she ends up checking herself out of rehab because, like, what the fuck is happening? This is the part that I'm not totally and completely sure about, because I've heard Trista say this in interviews, that as a stipulation of Ayla living with Justin or him taking custody of her, that he had to move in with his mother, Phoebe.
Right.
Because she felt like that would be the safest place for Ayla to be if she was going to be in the care of Justin. Justin kind of likes to, in interviews, which he doesn't do a ton of interviews, but he likes to kind of use that as, well, we had this agreement. She knew, like, she and I, basically the way he words it is, she and I sat down and talked and decided that it was going to be better for Ayla to live with me during this time. That's the agreement that we had. And that's not the agreement that they had. He called the state while she was unavailable, had the child taken away from her and placed into his custody. And then during that process, it seemed like Trista just did not have the legal ability to regain custody of her in that moment. Because of course, and I don't know all of the ins and outs, but if he's going to the court saying she's an unfit mother and this child needs to be in my care, and then the judge sees that she's currently in rehab, he's going to award the kid to Justin.
Well, exactly. I mean, everything, that was like the perfect storm for him to have taken custody of Ayla.
Exactly. And he knew that and he took advantage of it, like you said. So it was just this legal situation where she couldn't just go and take Ayla back. There was a custody, she could have gone to jail for that. Like, she had to play by the rules of the law, and you have to do certain things and meet certain things to get her back. So this is all happening. But during that time, Trista made it very clear that Ayla needed to be, if she was going to be in Justin's care, custody, that they needed to live with his mom because she thought that would be the safest place for her. And I read, I kind of went down a little bit of a rabbit hole with this because this is just, this is one of those cases that you're just like, I'm sorry, how did this happen? How did we get to this point?
Right.
The justice system, the Department of Health and Human Services, child, so every single one of these people failed Ayla Reynolds. 100%. But because Justin, when he would have Ayla for those very short periods of time that he did, she always came back with mysterious injuries or bruises. And Justin would always make up some wild reason why she would have this major injury, or maybe not a major injury, but like big bruise, like stuff like that. So there was one time that she came back and she had a massive bruise, I think on her shin. It was somewhere on her leg. Like bad. And she was like not wanting to walk on that leg, really. It was so painful for her. And so they were like, hey, what happened to her leg? Like, this is not okay. And Justin was like, oh, you know, I took her to Chuck E. Cheese and she was in the ball pit. And this kid in the ball pit was just like repeatedly kicking her on the leg over and over and over and over. And so that's how she got that bruise. And as soon as I read that, I was like, Chuck E. Cheese doesn't have a ball pit. Chuck E. Cheese does not have a ball pit.
That's
exactly what Trista said. She was like, we go to that Chuck E. Cheese with Ayla. It does not have a ball pit. Like, so they, you know, they know that he's lying and he doesn't care. Like, he will just make stuff up. He had to, maybe he didn't know that they frequent that Chuck E. Cheese or whatever, but like any parent who has gone to Chuck E. Cheese knows they don't have a ball pit. Maybe they did in the 80s. I don't remember, but I know right now, the Chuck E. Cheese here ain't got a ball pit. So like, he just makes stuff up. So right before he got custody, right? She broke her arm.
Yes. And we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. So how the court system said, yeah, this sounds like a better fit.
Right.
I don't understand. This time of year is for making resolutions, things you promise yourself to start doing, do better, or quit doing. And one thing I think we should all quit doing is wearing uncomfortable shapewear.
Hear, hear.
I mean, that's over now, right? You're worth more than that. And we all are. Support for today's episode comes from Honeylove. Honeylove has revolutionized the bra game so you no longer have to deal with uncomfortable underwire without sacrificing support. You'll immediately feel and see the difference. Their bras are so comfortable, you won't want to take it off. For a limited time only, you can get Honeylove on sale. So get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link. That's honeylove.com/queens. Please support our show and check them out at honeylove.com/queens.
Uncomfortable shapewear is about as useful as a poopy flavored lollipop. No one wants it. And you wouldn't even wish it on your own worst enemy. You know what I mean? So Honeylove is not like that at all. It's so comfy, you forget you even have it on. And that rarely, if ever, happens with shapewear. All of us ladies have a go-to bra that we pick over everything else in our closet. And Honeylove's crossover bra is so comfortable, it's sure to be your new go-to. This bra gives all the support of traditional bras without using any underwires. Plus, mesh detailing adds a touch of sexy. This is the one bra that you'll actually enjoy wearing and won't want to take off. Are you tired of bras that cause bulging in the back? Because I know I am. And Honeylove's bras are designed with back-smoothing fabric to prevent bra bulge. And they have incredibly comfortable shapewear tanks and leggings for everyday support. Speaking of leggings, Honeylove's Legging 2.0 is another product that's making headwaves. They hold you in without the too tight feeling and are compressive, cooling, and comfortable. Whether your New Year's resolution is to get up and active, or spend more time at home lounging, these leggings are the go-to for an everyday look or a workout at the gym.
Treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% at honeylove.com/queens. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/queens. After you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Start the new year with confidence thanks to Honeylove. Again, treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/queens. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/queens. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please remember to support our show and tell them that we sent you. Start the new year with confidence thanks to Honeylove. So, on December 15th, 2011, just 2 days before Ayla was reported missing, Trista filed to regain custody of Ayla. And then 2 days later, she disappears. Later on in the same day, Trista called and tried to talk to Ayla. And at this time, she was told that Ayla was watching Home Alone and was unable to come to the phone.
Okay.
She's a little over a year old.
Yeah. She's not watching it anyway. We all know that.
No. No. The most that she's going to watch is Cocomelon, which I don't know if Cocomelon was a thing then. But, you know, it's like the songs that they'll sit there and watch. She's not going to sit through a Home Alone.
No. I've also heard there was a girl that I used to work with. She had a daughter. I don't know how old she was, but she was young, very young. And all she wanted to do, she would be in her... This was like before she could walk. So she was in her little walker thing. And her mom would be like, yeah, if I turn on... I can't remember what movie it was. It was like a dog movie. I'm going to say Balto, but I don't know if that was. But she was like, if I turn it on, wherever she is in the house, she comes running in and she just stops and watches it. Like, you know, some kids have their movie, but like Home Alone wouldn't be one of them because there are no cartoons. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it's not stuff that's going to grab their attention like that when they're that little.
No.
And I know not every young child is like this, but my youngest, who is 5 and a half, he still will not sit through a whole movie.
No.
He wants to play. He wants to get up and play. Like our oldest would, he was probably 3 and a half or so when he really started watching a whole movie, like where he would sit and watch something, but it was animated. I mean,
yeah.
Needed something that was going to hold his attention.
Yeah. You're not going to turn on Tombstone and he's going to be like, oh, yeah, I love this movie.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. Again, she's a year and a half old. So I'm the way that I'm thinking is, yeah, you might have the movie on. There is a pause button. Or let's say it's on TV. It doesn't matter. She's not watching it anyway. So bring her ass to the phone.
Well, yeah. And she's 20 months old. So like Trista said that there would be times that she would call to try to talk to her and they would be like, oh, sorry, she doesn't want to talk to you right now. Says who? Ayla didn't say that.
Right. But also that's like trying to pin down a kid. Like I've got nephews. I've called and sometimes they're like, I'm busy right now. But it's like, that's kids, you know, like that's not.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's just interesting. Like, they're obviously trying to find all these reasons why Ayla can't talk to Trista.
Yeah.
But I also heard Trista's family said that because, you know, they were there when the police came to take Ayla. And they said, and they've put a lot of information out there. Obviously, this is from their perspective and their memories. I know that some people will say, well, that's not, you know, how do you know that that's fact or whatever? I'm just telling you what their perspective is. But they said that when she was being transferred into Justin's care, that Ayla was, you know, happy-go-lucky kid. She's chit-chatting with even the police officers, you know, she's happy around the family. And then when she sees Justin, she becomes inconsolable. She's very upset and doesn't want to go with him. Mm-hmm. You cannot tell me that child did not want to talk to her mother.
Right.
That's who she spent most of the time with. And she was very comfortable and safe with her.
Right. So obviously they were just really, really trying to isolate her and keep all communication with Trista at a zero.
Yep.
So just before 9 a.m. on the morning of December 17th, this is 2011, Justin DiPietro called the police department to report 20-month-old Ayla missing from his mother's house on Violet Avenue in Waterville, Maine. At that time, he was staying at his mom's house with his then-girlfriend, Courtney Roberts, and his sister, Alicia DiPietro. All three adults say that they put Ayla to bed the night of December 16th, and she was wearing a green polka dot pajamas that read Daddy's Princess across the front. That burns me up.
It really burns me up. Why? Okay. Okay, Justin. And they put her to bed at 8 o'clock p.m.
Yeah.
Keep jot that down.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep that for later. So Ayla, this is what we were talking about a little bit earlier, but Ayla also had a cast on her left arm. Police say that police and Justin say the broken arm was from an accidental fall. However, Trista is suspicious that something more sinister happened to her. Then, according to Justin, when they woke up the next morning, Ayla was gone.
Yeah. So they put her to bed at 8 p.m. They check on her at 9 o'clock the next morning. And she's 20 months old, and they put her in a room by herself.
Mm-hmm.
When the other children in the house, because there's other children in the house.
Yeah, there are two other children.
Are staying in rooms with adults. This is a small house. This is not freaking the Ramsey house where you've got two staircases or three staircases or whatever. This is a small house that's like definitely less than a four-bedroom house. I don't know. I can't remember exactly like the square footage. Justin, Courtney, and her, I believe, daughter. This is a minor, so I don't know a lot about her because you're not going to hear that. But we're staying in the basement. Then Alicia would have been upstairs with her daughter.
Her kid, or yeah.
I don't know, her child. Phoebe was reportedly not in the home. And Ayla was in a room by herself. For 13 hours, they don't check on her. Which if a child is sleeping, fine, whatever. But usually you'd have a monitor or something like that. I don't think there's any indication that they had a monitor. And we're going to find some stuff out later that say... where you're going to say, well, then why the fuck weren't you checking on her? But go ahead.
The investigation into her disappearance began immediately. Within hours of the call, a search for Ayla began. The police, firefighters, and community members all aided in the search for the little girl. Trista appealed to the public right away, pleading for the safe return of her daughter. And as the search continued, a nearby stream was drained so that a search by overhead planes could be done. But unfortunately, that search turned up nothing as well. Waterville Police Chief Joe Massey said that they received over 100 tips and over 75 officers were working on the case. After 4 days of searching, Justin released his first statement, which said, quote, I have no idea what happened to Ayla or who was responsible. I will not make accusations or insinuations towards anyone until the police have been able to prove who's responsible for this. He stated that he needed to make sure the public knew that he wasn't in hiding and that he had nothing to do with Ayla's disappearance. He also said that Trista's accusations of his intentional harm to Ayla's arm was, quote unquote, ludicrous.
This is just one of those situations where there are all these things that if they had happened in and of themselves in a vacuum, children fall and break their arms. Sure. But all the things that happened in this case and the way that they happened and they all happened together, and you're telling me that they got nothing to do with each other. It's right. Not just one thing. It's not just two things. There's like 50 things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, in so many cases, it's like, okay, well, if just this one thing all by itself happened, then we wouldn't suspect you, right? But there's so many things that you have to look at and you're like, okay, you put them all together and it's like, dude, boom, guilty. Like, hello. On Christmas Eve, 2011, Waterville police appealed for a break in media coverage so they could, quote, work outside the microscope. So basically, they were asking for the media to not report on their every move. The near constant reporting probably made it difficult to talk with people without them later being reported as a suspect or a person of interest. I understand this completely. Within a couple of weeks, Ayla's disappearance was national news and the FBI had gotten involved and offered a $30,000 reward. 13 days after the police were called, Trista appeared on the Today Show and said that Justin was the only one who could answer questions and that she just wanted to talk to him. Like, and she said it multiple times. She was like, all I want is for him to talk to me. Like,
yeah, because at this point, he's not speaking to her. He won't answer any questions. He won't talk to her at all. He won't tell her what happened that night. Like, I'm sure that he knew that she was suspicious of him. But that's not a good look.
No, not at all.
If somebody really did abduct your child from your home, you would think that even though they're not together and whatever, that they would both be this unified front.
They're in this together.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
Yeah. And he won't speak to her at all. Mm-hmm. He won't answer her phone calls. He won't talk to her. Like, none of it.
But that tracks for Justin.
100%.
she was asked if she thought Justin had anything to do with Ayla's disappearance. And she said that part of her says yes and part of her says no. The part of her that says yes is because despite him saying he isn't in hiding, he isn't coming out and he isn't talking to her. During the episode of the Today Show, we learned that Justin at the time was not a suspect in the case and was pleased with how the investigation was going. And by this time, the police had received over 400 tips.
How are you, I understand that if you're that the police can do everything they can possibly do, you know, that they may be doing everything that they can possibly do. I just don't know that I've ever heard it worded that way with like, well, I'm really pleased with how this investigation is going. My child's not been found and we have no idea what happened to her, but it's going really well.
Well, yeah, that's suspicious all by itself because it's like, I don't know. Are you pleased because they're not looking at you?
That's what it feels like.
I know. 2 days after Trista's appearance on the Today Show, Justin made a public statement. He said that he was emotionally incapable of coming out and doing an interview and that law enforcement said if he did, it would hinder the investigation.
Yeah, so that's why he's now, only now coming out and speaking. Like, and that was the interview where the interviewer was like, tell us like what makes your daughter so special? Like, tell us what you love about her. And he's like, I mean, she's my daughter. Like, she's my world. She's my everything. And like, one of the things that they asked was like, what do you want people to know about your daughter? And he's like, I mean, she's my daughter. I would never hurt her. It was
tell
so
us you don't
vague.
Know your kid without yes. telling us you don't know your kid.
There was nothing that he said that was like, you know, her favorite cereal was this, or she always laughed when this happened, or, you know, just like those little things about your kid that like he did. It was just so weird how vague it was. I mean, she's my daughter. She's everything to me. The answers were so, it was so awkward and uncomfortable.
He is an awkward guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest question that Ayla's family had was what happened in the 13 hours from when Ayla was put to bed and the 911 call was placed. As the investigation continued, there was talk online that Ayla had been found 50 miles away in Lewiston, but unfortunately, the police said that it wasn't true, that it was just a rumor, and there were no new leads at the time. This kind of stuff just pisses me right the fuck off. Like, I don't know how a rumor like that gets started, but I do feel like, I mean, it could have been best of intentions and innocent, like somebody thought that they saw her and the tip was called in or something. I don't know, but it just gets on my nerves because some people do it just to be hateful. So at this point, there are no new leads. Then Justin's mom, Phoebe DiPietro, made her first appearance on TV. Phoebe said that it was very creepy to think that someone was casing your house and that it was just a normal night of hanging out. She said that her son had nothing to do with Ayla's disappearance and she pleaded for her safe return. Justin had told police that he believed someone came into the house during the night and taken Ayla. One of my New Year's resolutions is to go on more walks and maybe just get outside more. But I mean, okay, so here in Tennessee, well, here in the South, we've had snowpocalypse.
Oh my gosh.
So I don't like to get my paws wet. I'm going to put that on hold, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah, just after snowpocalypse is over.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. I have plans. Mm-hmm. Another one of my New Year's resolutions is to get clearer, healthy skin in 2024. And that's why we're excited to partner with Apostrophe. Whether you're dealing with hormonal acne, breakouts, signs of aging, or acne scarring, Apostrophe's mission is to empower you and help you feel confident and comfortable in your own skin.
Apostrophe is an online platform that connects you with an expert dermatology team to get customized acne treatment for your unique skin. Through Apostrophe, you can get access to oral and topical medications that use clinically proven ingredients to help clear acne. Simply fill out an online consultation about your skin goals and medical history, then snap a few selfies. That's easy, right? We all do it.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
And a dermatology provider will create a customized treatment plan just for you. Apostrophe offers access to prescription treatments for all types of acne, from hormonal acne to facial acne, even back, chest, and butt acne, you guys.
Would that be buttney?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah.
You've got the buttney. They've got your answer, okay? Treat breakouts from head to toe. One thing I want to work on with my skincare is to improve my skin texture and maybe help with a little acne. Adult acne honestly can like super suck it. Okay.
Yeah.
And what I have loved with Apostrophe is that the tailor-made plan for exactly what you're looking to work on is amazing. And don't even get me started on their cute little postcards they send with the package. Oh. They really make you feel like so special and precious opening your box.
Ugh. We have a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit for only $5 at apostrophe.com/queens when you use our code queens. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/queens and click get started. Then use our code queens at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. In the weeks following Ayla's disappearance, both Trista and Justin took polygraphs, but the police never shared the results from either of those. For about a week and a half, the police gathered evidence from Phoebe's home and hundreds of pieces of potential evidence were taken. During their searches of the home, investigators found no signs of forced entry and no evidence that someone had gone into the home and taken Ayla as Justin had suggested. The biggest piece of evidence was blood that was found in the basement.
I think that's bad.
I think that's very bad.
That's not a good sign.
No. And so with no signs of anyone coming in or out and blood on the scene, all three adults that were in the home that night that Ayla disappeared became suspects. This included, so it was Justin DiPietro, his sister Alicia, and then his then girlfriend, Courtney Roberts. Now, I'm not trying to be rude. I guess it is rude. I don't know. Justin DiPietro, maybe he used to be a looker. I don't know. How is he getting so many girlfriends?
I'm very confused about that.
I mean, I don't mean to be, I will pick on somebody when I think they are a bad person and did a bad thing. And I think he is a bad person and did a bad thing. That's what I think. So that's the only reason why I feel comfortable being like, I don't get it. But anyway, the blood was tested and it was found that it belonged to Ayla. God. And this was, I mean, this was a significant amount of blood. It's not like she cut her knee riding a bike. Well, she's a year and a half. She's not even riding a bike. You know what I mean, though? Like,
yeah, yeah.
On her tricycle and skinned her knee or something.
It's a lot of blood. There is blood found on multiple items.
And it appeared as if someone tried to clean it up before police got there.
Yes. And there was even more blood visible when they used luminol. So like there's blood that they find. They found some blood in Justin's car too. And they said that because of the like pattern of the blood, it looked like it had been sprayed out, either like blunt force trauma spatter, or that she had like vomited blood. And Alicia, Justin's sister, was like, well, yeah, I mean, Ayla had been vomiting a lot before she disappeared.
Vomiting she was, blood?
Mm-hmm. She was lactose intolerant, and so sometimes she would vomit blood.
No.
And she made it sound like, I mean, yeah, so that's what was happening. Deal? And it's like, but if she's vomiting that much blood, this is another situation where you got her no medical care then.
Right.
That's not normal. And for her to continue to vomit that much blood, you have to continually be giving her the thing that you know is going to make her puke blood.
Yeah. The only reason I feel like if someone was vomiting blood, but I would still be concerned about it, is if this is an Evil Dead situation and you've been possessed. And then I'd be like, oh, okay, well, it's just the demon inside. Okay, I get that. Still worried, though, don't get me wrong, but it's like, okay, we got an excuse here. There's a reason for the why.
This is not normal. This is not, a child should not be. I mean, this is the a telltale sign of abuse of a child is refusing to or delaying getting medical care for a child. So how many situations do we already have? Yeah. Where her leg was so bruised up that she was having trouble walking on it. No medical care there.
The broken arm, and we will talk about that more in detail, but they it happened apparently at like in the evening. There was no medical care given until the next morning.
Mm-hmm. And it, and maybe, I mean, maybe it wasn't until later the next day.
Sure.
Cause you know, I mean, unless next I saw morning a timestamp. Yeah, exactly. Like, and are there some situations where a kid falls and you're like, okay, you know, sometimes stuff happens. Like I broke my foot. I didn't get medical care for that for 6 weeks because I didn't realize it was broken. Like I understand that sometimes things like that can happen where it's like, it didn't hurt as much as I thought it would, or, she, you know, she's 20 months old, so she can't really express that other than crying. And they said that she cried initially and then she seemed okay after that for a while. So they thought it was okay, but then they decided to go get her care. But like, I understand that that can sometimes happen. But again, that is if that happened in a vacuum and there were not all these other things,
right,
that lead you to believe that this is part of a pattern of refusing to get her medical care, not taking care of her in the way that she needs to be taken care of.
Exactly. Yeah. At this point, police were 6 weeks into their investigation and they believed that the three adults present in the home that night knew way more than they were letting on. The day following this announcement, Justin and Trista made their first appearance together at a vigil for Ayla. Both were asked about the blood evidence found, but Justin declined to answer. Trista said, quote, "I'm ready to go knocking at people's door myself because I want to know what happened to my daughter and I want to know where she is and who took her or just whatever, like everybody else does." Justin's mom maintained that she believed Justin when he said that he had nothing to do with Ayla going missing. Months passed with no new evidence or sightings of the little girl. Divers searched more streams. Police in the community continued looking, but Ayla still wasn't found. 5 months into the search, the police made a statement that it was very unlikely that Ayla would be found alive and that nothing pointed to her being alive. After this announcement, Trista's father is seen on the news yelling to the camera, speaking directly to Justin that they need to come forward. In March of 2012, more than 100 searchers scoured Waterville and the surrounding areas. And during the search, they found the remains of Stephen C. Brandon of Waterville, who was missing since February of 2004, but his death was not related to Ayla's case. So I guess another trigger warning here, I'm so sorry, but Brandon had died by suicide in 2004. So they had found his remains at that time. And it was estimated that state police, Waterville police, and the warden service had spent about $100,000 in overtime related to the investigation. Police Chief Joseph Massey later estimates the cost of the investigation that he said it could be as high as $500,000. In September of 2013, this is almost 2 years after Ayla's disappearance, Justin was charged with assault and violating terms of release. Trista was at the police station at the time of the arrest, along with Justin's mom, and the two had a confrontation. It's very uncomfortable. Phoebe is yelling at Trista to, "What did you do with Ayla? What did you do with her?"
That felt so bizarre to me because mm-hmm. they literally, you know, is this the way you would normally handle something like this? Probably not. But this has been years. These people will not respond to them. They won't give them any information. Like, obviously something happened to her in that house. Again. Is it possible that Ayla was abducted? Sure, that's possible. Is it even possible that she was abducted with three other adults in that home who did not hear anything? It is possible. It is possible. We've seen cases like that. I'm thinking of the Innocence Project, the first two cases that they cover where these children were removed, some of them in bed with other children, removed by somebody they did not know. Mm-hmm. That's not how the case played out initially, but now we know it was somebody that they did not know. They were able to break into the house and not really leave any signs of forced entry because the homes were in the condition that they were in.
Right.
And they were able to remove these children and it was somebody they didn't know and like all the things, right? That seems, you would think, no, an adult would hear that. An adult would hear something. The child would wake up and start screaming because they don't know this person. That's not how children sleep. When children fall asleep, they are out. You can take a sleeping baby and change their diaper and they might not wake up. Like you can move them to the car or...
We've heard of cases where even older children have been taken. They sense that they're in somebody's arms. They open their eyes, they're outside and they're like, okay, well, I'm just going to go back to sleep now.
Because I'm sure that my mom or dad yeah, I'm sure my mom or dad told this person to carry me and they just go right back to sleep. Yeah, mm-hmm. we've heard people say this.
Right.
So is all of that possible? Absolutely, it is possible. Well, now let's throw in all the blood we found.
Yeah, I was going to say, again, we know too much for that to be a viable option at this point.
Exactly. There is so much blood. There is no blood found in the room that they said she slept in for 13 hours. And they said she slept there for 13 hours. Nobody checked on her during that time. This is now from Alicia's recollection. She's vomiting blood all the time. Never know when that's going to happen. So we don't go check on her. She doesn't happen to vomit any blood in the room that she's in for 13 hours, but it definitely is in the basement where Justin is.
In his car.
One of these things is not like the other. They don't go together.
Well, and let's say that she was abducted. It's not true, but let's say she was. And the person who abducted her, what brought her down to... If we're going with the abducted and maybe the abductor has murdered her, he's going to parade her around the basement first and then exit the home again. Like,
yeah, why would you go into the basement if that's not where she was?
Right.
Where other people are, and then remove her from the home.
Right.
Like, oh, again, and for good measure, stick stuff in Justin's car.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. But for Phoebe to yell at Trista and say, because she's like, I'm her grandmother. And Trista's like, I'm her mother. Like, uh-huh. I need answers or whatever. And she's like, I refuse to believe that she's dead. You need to tell us what you did with her. I'm like, oh, no, you didn't.
What? Right. And the entitlement of her being like, well, I'm her grandmother. It's like, okay, well, you're not her fucking mother, and I am.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Phoebe has been an interesting character through this whole thing. It was always said that Phoebe wasn't in the house when this happened. And there started to be rumors that Justin had maybe had a party that night, that there were like a bunch of people there hanging out or something like that. And so Justin and Courtney and Alicia were all like, no, there was definitely not a party. It was just us, whatever. So then Phoebe decides, well, I know what I'll do. I'll tell everybody I was there and there was nobody else there. I'm going to corroborate their story. And then when confronted with like, what the fuck? You've always told the police that you weren't there. She was like, okay, I lied. I wasn't there. Like, you're right. I made it up. But I know that they didn't have anybody over. I was just trying to help. So like, now you've got somebody who kind of felt like she'd lie to protect her son, but now we know she's lying to protect her son and she wasn't there. Maybe she really does believe that her son had nothing to do with it.
Well,
that's possible, but we don't do that.
No, I mean, that is not going to help anybody.
No, and now you've completely killed your own credibility. So now nothing you say is going to be paid attention to and has to be thrown out because it doesn't matter because we know you lie.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And Trista has so much, I don't even know the right word, like patience for sure, but she's such a better person than I think I could ever be. Like, I don't know how she dealt with all of this.
I don't either.
Prosecutors soon dismissed the assault charges on Justin because the victim was no longer cooperating, but he did plead guilty to violating the conditions of his release tied to a traffic stop. He was sentenced to 4 days in jail and $150. Wow. That's a hefty fine for a traffic stop. I don't know why I said that. It's $150. With time served, he was released. After this, Trista was doing her best to keep Ayla's memory alive while Justin fled the state. Again, not a good look. 2 years after Ayla's disappearance, there was another vigil and Trista demanded answers. The state police said that the investigation was still active at that time.
On June 25th, 2015, the body of a small child was found on the shoreline of Deer Island near Boston. Waterville is about 3 hours north of Boston, so not super close, but not super duper far either. There were some similarities between the body that was found and Ayla Reynolds, which led many to believe that it could be her. A woman had been walking her dog when the dog stopped to investigate a plastic bag.
Everybody knows where this is headed.
Mm-hmm, exactly. The body was in a pair of white leggings with a black polka dot blanket. Unsure if there would be additional bodies on or near the beach, authorities used cadaver dogs to search the area. Fortunately, no additional bodies were located, and due to decomposition and other factors, the body was unable to be visually identified. Initially, investigators suspected that the girl had died only a few days before she was discovered. So the girl was estimated to be between 3 and 5 years old, which could possibly line up with Ayla if she had been taken back in 2011. Initially, it seemed like this is what sparked many to think it might actually be her. All of the girl's identifying information was put into the NCMEC database and was cross-referenced with cases that involved similarly aged children. Investigators were unsure of how the body even ended up on the shore, and their thoughts were that either someone put the body there or it washed up from the water, which would narrow things down. The U.S. Coast Guard offered their assistance, and that's sarcasm. Yeah. Like, they're like, either somebody put it there or they didn't. I don't. Like, they did or they right. didn't. One of those two.
Right. I mean, there. As far as I can tell, there's not a third option where it was, like, sprouted from the ground. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah. Like,
no shit.
Exactly. I know. And I get that, like, that's all they have. Like, there's not evidence one way or the other. But, like,
it's just funny, like, well,
I don't know.
Get,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, okay, thanks. The U.S. Coast Guard offered their assistance and set about studying the tides and currents of the water in the area in an effort to estimate where the remains could have originated from. Divers dove around the area to check and see if there was anything in the surrounding area that might help them, but absolutely nothing was found. After talking with the Coast Guard and looking at all the information regarding the movement of the water, authorities believed that information coupled with the stage of decomposition pointed towards the body having been placed there by someone. At this point, they'd still not identified the young girl, and the NCMEC did a digital reconstruction of the face of the child. Using Photoshop, forensic artist Christy Andrews created a reconstruction of what the girl could have looked like. It was released, and many people mistook it for an actual photograph. Press conferences were held, and the public was encouraged to think, like, are there any children that you know of that you haven't seen in a while? Hundreds of tips were called in or sent online and investigated. Authorities combed through every missing person's case that they could, but nothing was close. Nothing matched. They couldn't find anything. They began to think this child may not have ever been reported missing in the first place. A criminologist theorized that the child having been murdered by a stranger didn't really seem likely based on the statistics of similar cases from the past. Forensic teams ran DNA tests against samples already on file in hopes of matching it to a family member, but nothing returned a hit. And also, if this had been a child who was murdered by a stranger, the parent would have reported this child missing.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
So that really leaves somebody who doesn't want to report the child missing because they have something to do with it.
Right.
Hey, y'all. You know how Tori is basically a Spice Girl and dresses the cutest and has the best makeup and hair in the whole world? Or like how I can't stop buying stuff on Amazon, mostly for my kids? Well, we get asked all the time, where does Tori get her clothes and makeup? And what stuff am I constantly overbuying to make mom and home life easier? So we made a links page. Head over to killerqueenspodcast.com/links and scroll down to shop our style or our Amazon faves. Here you'll find all the posts you can shop with our unique links to each item, as well as our Amazon storefront, where we have lists like 90s finds. This is curated by Tori with all the best 90s stuff like Tamagotchis and My Little Ponies, my back to school must-haves list, gift ideas for kiddos that I love, podcast essentials if you ever want to start your own show, and more. And we add to it all the time. Now, to be totally honest, we do make a commission if you use these links to make a purchase, and we always appreciate everything you do to keep the lights on over here. So be sure to head to killerqueenspodcast.com/links and scroll down to shop our style or our Amazon faves to totally twin with us. We love you guys to the moon, and we cannot wait to share all of our style and life faves with you. CNN ran an interview between Anderson Cooper and John Walsh. We all know him from America's Most Wanted. In the interview, Walsh said that it was possible that people weren't submitting tips because they were afraid it would lead to their own family being investigated for something unrelated. And specifically, he mentioned a case where a family of undocumented immigrants did not report a child missing for fear of deportation. So he said, look, if anybody knows something, but you're afraid to talk to police for any reason, contact me directly and I will make sure that you remain completely anonymous. Like, we just need the information. Don't be afraid of all these other unintended effects, basically. And they did get more tips. Eventually, a tip came in that pointed the police to Rochelle Bond. A neighbor had noticed that Bond's young daughter hadn't been around. And when she asked Bond and her boyfriend, Michael McCarthy, about her, they said that she had been taken away by the Department of Children and Family Services, which later was proven to be a lie. The neighbor told her sister that she suspected that Baby Doe, which is what this child had been called by the media, was actually Bond's young daughter, Bella. Another witness said she grew concerned when she hadn't seen Bella in a while and all of her toys had been thrown out. Police executed a warrant on Bond's apartment on September 17th. Both Bond and her boyfriend were taken into custody. In their trials, both claimed that the other was responsible. Classic.
Yeah.
Bond eventually took a plea in exchange for testifying against McCarthy in his trial. She was given time served plus 2 years of probation as, quote, an accessory after the fact. She testified against McCarthy, claiming he was responsible for killing Bella and that she only went along with him afterwards out of fear. She claimed that he injected her with heroin as a tranquilizer to keep her under control. McCarthy was charged with first-degree murder, but the judge allowed the jury to consider lesser charges of second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter. In June of 2017, the jury returned a guilty verdict of second-degree murder, and 2 days later, he was sentenced to life in prison and is eligible for parole in 2037. So, thankfully, Bella's remaining family was able to get some closure, but this means we still did not know where Ayla Reynolds was or what happened to her.
Just so sad.
Like, yeah, it's like, it's sad enough that this one child has gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've been led to another child. Oh, what is happening, people?
I have no idea. I don't understand it. And this particular plea deal really burns my bucket. I do not enjoy that at all.
No. I mean, and I don't know all the details of this case. Sure, you know, sure. We have kind of an overview, but
it doesn't seem fair, in my opinion.
No. This is a child who has been murdered.
Ah. At the hands of her mother, who one would think she would trust, and somebody that her mother brought into her life. So,
yeah.
In 2017, this is 6 years after Ayla's disappearance, Ayla was declared legally dead. A judge ruled that her time of death was on or about December 17th, 2011. Alicia DiPietro made a statement saying, quote, I refuse to believe my niece is dead. She claimed that her brother and family had nothing to do with Ayla's disappearance. Phoebe, again, Ayla's grandmother, said that the media wanted to convict them. Justin was no longer in Maine and he had not been heard from or seen in quite some time. A few months later, the show Crime Watch Daily spotted him in California and confronted him. I don't know how reporters do this. I really don't. Like, hey, don't you obviously don't want to talk to me. What happened? Yeah. How do you feel about this? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Ugh. He told them that he believed it was someone he knew who had taken her and asked if they could meet at a later time. And then he slipped through a seam in the wall and has not been seen publicly after that.
Because they're like, what do you think happened to your daughter? Like, do you think it was somebody you knew? Do you think it was a stranger? And he's like, yeah, someone I know. Yeah, I think someone I know. And she's like, really? Can you, like, what do you... Why do you think that? And he's like, actually, could we talk another time? She's like, yeah, for sure.
Can we reschedule this?
For sure. And then, of course, he's like, bye.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was a chance meeting on the street. Like, they just spotted him and they were like, oh, hey, there's that guy, you know? There's mm-hmm. Justin. And he looks... I didn't recognize him when you see him in the Crime Watch Daily. Personally, like his beard's really grown out. He just looks very disheveled, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in what world did you think that was going to be like, oh yeah, he'll definitely come through for an interview. That's going to happen. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's interesting, though, that he even said as much as he did.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And for him to say something like that, well, I think it was somebody I knew. Well, what makes you say that? Were there people at your house that night?
Right.
That you knew that it could have been? Have you told the police this information? Have you given police a list of people that you think? I think he may have been alluding to Trista. He's really tried to push back on her because she was like driving past Waterville to see a friend the day that Aylin went missing. But like the police checked all of that out and verified that like she didn't get off the exit there. She just drove past. So there, I mean, the police have, in the very, very beginning, the police thought maybe it was her because she had just attempted to regain custody, and 99% of, maybe that's not the actual number, but a large percentage of situations are a parent without a custody agreement takes the kid when they're not supposed to, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever. So at first they thought, well, she's trying to regain custody. Maybe she went and took her, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah. Once they verified everything, they're like, no, she wasn't in the area. Like, we know that.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, it's just interesting that he said that. And it's just like, well, if you think it's somebody that you knew, why are you just now saying this? This,
yeah.
Well, He's infuriating.
Absolutely. Days after the 7-year anniversary, Trista and her attorneys wanted to file a wrongful death suit against Justin, but he was nowhere to be found. Trista said that she hadn't spoken to him in 6 years. And in a broadcast, she said, quote, I wonder if our daughter haunts your dreams or if you see her blue eyes at night. I wonder if you even think about that night you murdered her. Justin and his attorneys denied having any involvement, and he still insisted that Ayla was taken that night, despite the police saying there was absolutely no evidence of that. In 2018, Trista filed a wrongful death suit against Justin. The lawsuit seeks monetary damages from Justin for causing Ayla's death through, quote, intentional wrongful actions, and for allegedly subjecting her to, quote, pre-death pain, fright, terror, and physical injuries. Trista's lawyers say that the suit was really for finding out what happened to Ayla, when, why, and where. Justin's attorney, Michael Waxman, responded on behalf of his client. Of the responses, 23 were admissions, while 8 were denials. There were 2 left unanswered, and 10 were a combination of admission, denial, objection, and qualification. Waxman denied both counts of wrongful death and conscious pain and suffering, and he admitted to the following. The purchase of a life insurance policy on Ayla approximately a month prior to her disappearance.
I'm sorry, what? What?
Yeah.
This man wants nothing to do with this child her entire life. He denies it's even his child until a paternity test is done. Avoids the shit out of her.
Mm-hmm.
Can't tell you anything about her.
No.
Then all of a sudden, immediately following taking a life insurance policy out on her, he fights for custody.
Mm-hmm. And then she immediately goes missing.
And then she goes missing.
Like, all of the motive, like, that did it for me.
Mm-hmm.
But he also admitted to Ayla suffered a broken arm on November 11th, 2011. This was said to have been caused by Justin falling while holding Ayla. Medical treatment was not sought that night. The presence of 6 people the night of December 16th, 2011. So this is Ayla, Justin, Courtney, Courtney's kid, Alicia, and her kid. Waxman further touched on Ayla's broken arm, saying that she was taken in the next morning for treatment. This is now November 12th, but that Justin didn't believe that her arm was severely swollen or that she was in great pain. The suit stated that Ayla's injury was diagnosed as distal humerus, this is the elbow, fracture of her left arm with displacement. And one of our amazing writers, I don't know if it was Beth or Mark, but thank you so much for doing this. They looked up what that means. And apparently, a fracture with displacement is said to generally be more complex because the bones are out of alignment or can be in several pieces. This can also be more painful because they can be compound fractures breaking through the skin. So basically, if the diagnosis of a fracture with displacement is accurate, there was no way that Ayla did not feel it. And she, no way that she didn't have a great deal of pain.
No, like the break that I had in my foot, I mean, they didn't use these words with me, but I would say that's without displacement. Everything, there was just this little, like, in the x-ray, like a little line. Like, you could see it, but, like, my toe wasn't all fucked up or anything, you know? Like, nothing was moved out of place.
Right.
the bones in her arm were moved out of place. Mm-hmm. This is, everybody's seen somebody like break their arm and like a bone shoots through or like whatever. I'm not saying that that's how bad it was, but.
Well, I mean, okay. The only thing that I've ever broken in my life is my nose, and I've done it about 75 times.
Yeah.
But first time shattered. So I would call that with displacement because there were multiple pieces. Nothing came through, but everything was all over the place. Oh my God in heaven. There was no other feeling than pain. Like, I think I got sick about it. Because, again, yeah. I swallowed a lot of blood, but still, I was, like, throwing up from how bad it hurt. Second time, fractured it. So that would be without displacement, I would think. Still hurt, though. My, you know, in cartoons, like, womp, womp, womp. That's still, I felt it. Like, you felt your foot when it was, you didn't know it was broken, but you felt it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this tells me that they expected her to deal with a certain level of pain
on a regular basis, right? I mean, that was baseline for her.
Right. Because they're like, I mean, yeah, she seemed like she was in pain, but not like a ton of pain. Then fucking get her checked out.
Yeah.
He says he's walking up the stairs carrying her. He falls down the stairs on top of her fucking arm. You're a grown man. First of all, I don't think that's how it happened.
Oh, no, I don't think so either.
Like, none of that happened. But if that is what happened, you take her to the doctor. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't.
No. And again, if this was the only instance that we had to talk about, that might be a completely different story. But there are so many other moving parts in this that there's no way to not look at all of these things under a microscope and be like, what the fuck? Like, that's not okay.
Right.
The suit also stated that Trista hadn't seen Ayla since November 21st, 2011, and Waxman admitted on behalf of Justin that that was true. In 2022, Trista sought to add Phoebe and Alicia DiPietro to the lawsuit. Justin argued that this was past the two-year statute of limitations. She also wanted to add a claim that Justin breached a parental duty of care, which he objected to. Trista also wanted to add a claim against Phoebe as the owner of the premises. However, this failed because the complaint was devoid of any allegation that there were any dangerous conditions on the premises. Trista also, I don't feel comfortable saying the word seeked. I don't know. I'm sure that's like the way that you're supposed to say it, but I can't do it. So Trista also wanted to add a claim in her individual capacity against Justin, Alicia, and Phoebe for interference with the dead body. All counts with the exception of the premises were granted. These were added due to the evidence of Ayla's blood being found throughout the house, totaling a cup's worth, and the evidence showed that someone tried to clean it up before the police arrived, like we said. The Maine State Police are still investigating Ayla's disappearance and continue to welcome tips in the case. Anyone with information should call 1-800-452-4664 or area code 207-624-7076. Anonymous tips can be left on the Maine State Police website as well. I am so mad. Like,
I know that you have to be, like, you've really got to have all your ducks in a row to get a criminal case to move forward and not end with a not guilty verdict and all those things. Like, I definitely understand that. There's so much blood found in that house. Like, one report that I read said that the police believe that internal and external injuries would have been sustained with the amount of blood that they found. This child is this big. And a cup of her blood was found.
Right. Well, and I hate cases where you know who did it. You know who had something to do with it at the very least, right? But there's obviously not enough, like you said. I understand that you got to have all of these things and you don't want to take something to trial not knowing if you're going to get a guilty verdict because you don't want a Casey Anthony situation on your hands. But it's just so frustrating because, and I guess I can understand too, without having her body, that has got to be difficult as well. But it's also just, I'm just... I don't know. I'm so mad. Like, you know, it's so incredibly, like, frustrating is not the best word for it because, and obviously I understand that I will never understand how bad it is for Trista and her family, but I get so frustrated because they obviously know something. They know something. Justin, Alicia, and Courtney. They all know something.
Mm-hmm.
That you can live with yourself doing that? Like, I do not understand it.
I don't either. I really don't, because, and Courtney and Justin aren't together anymore.
Right. Yeah, so Courtney really has, she has no reason to protect him unless it's going to implicate her, which is the only reason I can think. But it goes back to that whole thing, like, you know, three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead or whatever, you know. But these are three people that are keeping the secret. I don't understand how it's gone for this long. Like,
I don't either. I think it might be possible that Alicia maybe doesn't know what happened because she was in her own bedroom with her child and didn't, you know. But Courtney would have also been in the basement with her child and Justin. I just don't see any way that that amount of blood would have been left and Courtney like have no idea and he would be able to clean it up and she wouldn't know.
Right.
I do also think it's possible that Alicia does know what happened, but I think it is possible that maybe she and Phoebe really just believe Justin's story, or they really want to believe Justin's story. Right. And they don't know. But at the very least, Justin and Courtney have to have more information. And I think it's just very curious that he gets a life insurance policy. Now, I don't know that he's ever tried to make a claim on this policy. So that would kind of lend itself towards, well, maybe that had nothing to do with it.
And it would be difficult because, I mean, it took 7 years for them to declare her legally dead. So there would be no way, right? You can't cash in a life insurance policy without a death certificate.
Right. Which, you know, he may or may not have known that to begin with. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's a long con. I don't know. But
right.
But it is just very curious that he has not much to do with her. Then all of a sudden, Trista's in a position where she can't fight back. He petitions for custody, gets it. And just a few weeks before that, he's taken out a life insurance policy on this child that now mysteriously, every time she's at his house, she sustains major injuries and now she's disappeared.
Right.
And I also heard that the day that Ayla went missing, like earlier that day, that when Courtney had called and tried to talk to her and they told her, no, you can't talk to her or whatever.
No, not Courtney.
I'm sorry. Trista called and tried to talk to her and they said, you can't talk to her. That Justin told her that Trista and her family were never going to see Ayla again. And then she goes missing that night. Curiouser and curiouser.
You cannot make me believe in any way that Justin did not
at the very least
have something to do with it.
Yeah. And then you look at a few years down the road, he gets arrested for domestic violence, which a father doing something to their child is also domestic violence. Like that falls under that. So he gets arrested for, and I believe it was Courtney. I'm not totally sure about that. But of course, they don't follow through with those charges because the victim is no longer cooperating, because apparently you've got to put yourself in more danger to have someone charged with that. But it really doesn't matter who it was. The only thing that I feel like, not the only thing, but that could lend itself to say that maybe Courtney is afraid of him and that's why she's not saying anything. But it doesn't really matter who it is, in the sense that he's proven himself to be a person who physically harms those that are close to him that he is supposed to love and protect.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's just another notch to add in that pattern of behavior. It's another chain to add to. All of these things add up.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, we talk a lot about like people shouldn't be judged on their behavior after a tragedy happens, right? But fleeing the state not long after and like never being seen again is very, very suspicious to me.
If you think your child has been abducted and could return.
Right. Right. And he, as far as I know, I mean, of course, that first statement where he was like, I just found it very bizarre, too, that he was like, look, I'm not accusing anybody of doing this. I'm not saying that, you know, I don't know. It's weird because that to me wouldn't, I don't know. I would think that if I was in that position, I don't even have kids, but if I did and my child went missing and I made my statement, the first thing wouldn't be like, I'm not here to blame anybody. I just, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. That moment, everybody is a suspect.
Well, absolutely. And it seems like he was, anytime he's made a statement, he doesn't really know his daughter at all, if at all. And also he's like, well, he's always looking out for himself. And that doesn't lend itself to, I just don't think that he really cares that much either, because he didn't really care about her at all, or because he knows what happened to her. And I think both can be true at the same time.
Yeah. And he never helped with any of the searches. Like all of these people went to the vigil. I know. All of these people are going out looking for his daughter. They're searching and looking everywhere and he doesn't go.
Yeah.
Well, I know that there are some situations, we've covered cases where the police have said, you stay here, that way if they come back, you know, whatever. I don't know if the police told him that.
20-month-old child.
Like, yeah, she didn't walk off by herself.
No.
But again, it's just when you, if this was a man who had been reportedly a loving father throughout this child's life, who was adequately giving her medical care and just general care, and she wasn't getting, you know, again, do kids get hurt? Like, my kids get hurt all the time. All the time. Right now, my son has not a black eye, but the kids, like one head back, one head front, bonk. So he, you know, it's a little bit swollen and stuff like that. Like, I understand that stuff happens, but it doesn't happen to Ayla at near the rate when she's with Trista and her family, but it happens every time she's with Justin. He doesn't get her medical care any of these times appropriately. He waits. Oh, and there's a shit ton of her blood in the basement where he was staying.
Exactly.
So you follow that up with not helping with the searches, not talking to anybody, not able to give any information about his daughter, like it just fleeing, all of those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very, very frustrating. But of course, if anybody knows anything, please, please, please reach out and let someone know. And you can remain anonymous. But thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We love you. And we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening. And we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.